This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast.
So, Mark, this is a surprising study in some ways. Can you tell us what you found?
Yeah, sure. So, through the PrepX study in Melbourne, we were able to follow people who are predominantly gay and bisexual men who are attending some of the high caseload clinics in Melbourne and look at their STI testing patterns and their diagnosis patterns prior to commencing PrEP. And then when they went on to the PrepX study, we followed them forward and looked at their STI testing patterns and diagnoses while they were on PrEP. What we found was an increase in STI incidence when people moved on to PrEP. However, relative to what some people may have been suggesting in relation to the impact that PrEP would have on STIs, we detected what I would describe as a relatively modest increase in the incidence of STIs. A lot of the increase in STIs we could attribute to the increasing testing frequency that people engaged in when they were on PrEP, returning every 3 months for their PrEP scripts and getting tested for STIs every 3 months. So there was an increase in the rate of testing for STIs. And obviously the more you test, the more you find, as well as the fact that when people were diagnosed with STIs, they were treated, which, once someone is treated for an STI, that obviously makes them susceptible to a reinfection. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the increase was actually attributed to the increase in testing, not all of it. There was an increase in STIs regardless, but probably at the more modest end than what a lot of people were expecting.
Mm. And what was the overall increase that you found?
So what we found, once we adjusted for testing frequency, we found about a 20% increase in the incidence of STIs amongst men who were not on PrEP prior to enrolling in PrepX. Mm. So we looked at only those who were commencing PrEP for the first time, separately from those who had reported that they were self-importing PrEP prior to going on to PrepX. So, we think the PrEP-naive individuals at baseline probably represent a more accurate impression of what happens to STI risk when people start PrEP.
And what kind of STIs are we talking about?
Most of the infections we detected were bacterial STIs, rectal STIs, chlamydia and gonorrhea were the most common, and less so in relation to syphilis.
Mm-hmm. And were these results surprising?
They probably weren't overly surprising for me. I think we are likely to see some moderation in the incidence of STIs simply on the back of the higher frequency with which people will engage in healthcare while they're using PrEP. By returning to test every 3 months, by getting treated for STIs, a lot of these STIs are asymptomatic. So simply turning up and being tested on a regular basis for sexually transmitted infections while accessing PrEP is likely to drive a real sexual health benefit, sort of independent of any changes in risk behaviour that may be associated with PrEP.
Mm. And you also had some findings regarding condom use, didn't you, as well?
Yes, yeah, so what we did, we didn't compare changes in self-reported behaviour before and after PrEP, but what we did look at was look at the behaviours that were associated with STI diagnoses in amongst people who were taking PrEP. Surprisingly, we found that self-reported condom use was not actually associated with STI incident infections amongst those who were taking PrEP. What we did find was the significant impact of number of sex partners that people reported and also the reporting of group sex by individuals taking PrEP. So the hypothesis before this has been, when PrEP is introduced, people are going to dump condoms, they're going to engage in higher in less condom use and expose themselves to higher risk of STIs. And yeah, we found that, you know, it wasn't necessarily the any changes in condom use that was associated with STI infections while people were taking PrEP. Where, you know, the study wasn't designed to look in detail at what the drivers of STI infections were amongst people taking PrEP. But the findings suggest that, you know, rather than simply being related to increases in risk behaviour or reductions in condom use, which is, you know, a fairly simple sort of, you know, logical, you know, maybe common sense approach to what's driving STIs, we think the impact of PrEP may be a little bit more complex and nuanced than that. And maybe related to, you know, changes in men's sexual networks that are associated with commencing PrEP, you know, maybe, you know, one of the underlying drivers of risk. The other element that plays into that is that what we found was that STI infections were concentrated amongst a relatively small proportion of men on the PrEP-X study. About half of all men, you know, on PrEP-X got no STIs across follow-up at all.
Obviously, this research will feed into some debates within the gay community about PrEP use and whether it leads to reduced condom use, and you know, judgments that are sometimes being made about people who are on PrEP. But this research suggests that the solution perhaps isn't necessarily alterations in condom use, but rather testing regimes.
Yeah, I think what this research does is it helps in relation to health promotion and clinical practice around who we might want to target for health promotion campaigns, particularly advise around, you know, maybe primary prevention of STIs. So, you know, if people are getting repeated STI infections, as I said, you know, a lot of the STIs were concentrated amongst a small proportion of men who were getting repeat infections. Mm-hmm. So certainly repeat infections of STIs within, you know, seen in clinical practice can help guide, you know, potentially some targeted risk reduction conversations that can be had with people, as opposed to simply, you know, all men on PrEP should be, you know, guided towards, you know, these types of practices, mm-hmm. or those types of practices. Yeah. It helps us sort of, you know, tailor those messages towards people who might benefit more or who might be more vulnerable to repeated exposure to STIs, and potentially makes people reflect on, you know, the types of risk environments that, you know, they maybe inhabiting at different times, and, you know, allows people to reflect on their own, you know, their own risk within their own sort of complex and nuanced sort of relationships and environments.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess we want to be encouraging, you know, more open conversations about that, and instead of, you know, shaming and generalizing about people. So, because I know the study,
absolutely.
As you were, I think the specific elements of the data were that something like 25% of men were responsible for about 76% of the STIs that were identified over the course of the study. And as you were saying, so it suggests that these STIs are kind of in clusters amongst these smaller groups of men. So if we're talking about, say, offering more frequent testing to particular people who are more vulnerable to, say, contracting STIs for various reasons because of, you know, the patterns of sexual behaviour. But how would that work, do you think?
Look, I think it's what we've got in Australia. I think the other thing that, you know, our study does is it strongly endorses our PrEP guidelines in Australia. The high-frequency testing, you know, the return for repeat scripts every 3 months, certainly this research endorses that type of practice in some parts of the United States. You know, the CDC, you know, recommend, you know, as infrequent as, you know, potentially 6-monthly testing, although in certain locations, you know, they've changed that to sort of 3-monthly. I know New York has moved to 3-monthly testing in relation to PrEP. You know, what it does is it really emphasises the need to return on a regular basis for asymptomatic screening of STIs. As you said, there may be particular networks that are vulnerable to high incidence of reinfection, and in those instances, really a test and treat approach is the way to go. You know, mm-hmm. by testing and treating regularly and frequently, really interrupts the transmission dynamics. It reduces the amount of STIs, within a network, and therefore the susceptibility of people to get STIs. So, I think the research and the findings are real positive, I think, for the community. It does point to avoiding, as you said before, that sort of shaming and blaming of individuals. The fact that the STI infections were not necessarily related to condom use per se, but potentially some more nuanced interactions that are going on within people's sexual networks. I think it's both interesting and positive data, and I think what I would describe as a modest increase in STIs needs to be seen in the context of the substantial HIV prevention benefit that PrEP is providing. While we see a modest increase in curable STIs, what we will see over the years is a significant impact in the prevention of, a lifelong and incurable STI in HIV.
I mean, and also I think, as you were saying before, one of the reasons why the level of STIs being identified has gone up is because people are being tested more regularly and because of reinfection rates, because I think that's a really important part of the study. So Australia's current advice to gay and bisexual men is to have STI testing every 3 months. As you were talking about before, an alternative might be regular retesting for men who are about highly sexually active. I know that approach has also been used in London, and the STI rates have been reported as falling. Will community and clinicians push for this? And do you think, like, they're right now, the services are adequately funded to deliver that to a larger population?
Look, frankly, no. That does need to be seen in the context of a huge pressures on the health system in relation to the provision of sexual care and sexual health. I think it is recognised in Victoria and in many other parts of the country that we do need to expand our sexual health services and the capacity of our sexual health services to deliver more tests and then more diagnoses and treatments. We have seen very little expansion in sexual health services over the last couple of decades, despite, significant increase in population. I think the fact that a state, as well a city the size of Melbourne, 4.5 million people, and a state with 6 million people, has only one dedicated sexual health centre is, quite frankly, a little bit ridiculous. Yeah. I think the government recognises the need to expand sexual health services. But we also, potentially need to think of, more innovative, novel models of delivering STI testing as well. Mm. The potential to offer pre-filled scripts for people to, seek out STI testing without having to return back to clinics to get those scripts, may be an option. But we do need to think of, some more innovation in the way we provide sexual health services. The research also is relevant in relation to intermittent PrEP use. So obviously within PrEP-X, the protocol was around daily PrEP, and therefore the return every 3 months for a PrEP script. If people some people start moving towards intermittent PrEP and related to before and after particular risk events, the 3 monthly script that they provide or that they are given can potentially last much longer than 3 months. So if people are thinking about moving on to intermittent PrEP dosing, I think, you know, at that point in the conversation, the clinician does need to encourage people, you know, even though you may not need a new PrEP script, we would strongly encourage you to return within 3 months for that, you know, sexual health check and those STI tests.
Right.
If people are using it intermittently, then, you know, those visits, you know, may blow out. If they're only related to picking up a PrEP script, may blow out to 6 months or more.
The results of this study do suggest that we perhaps need to, in our guidelines, move towards a model of encouraging quarterly testing instead of the present standard 6 monthly testing if people are sexually active and using PrEP.
Yep. Certainly. In fact, you know, the results are encouraging of, you know, anybody who is sexually active and, you know, for people who are not on PrEP and have, have unprotected sex in terms of, you know, not using condoms, the results are encouraging of people to seek 3 monthly testing.
So what are your overall reflections on what this study suggests about people taking PrEP and its use as an effective treatment for reducing STIs?
The overall conclusions of the study, I think, suggest that, you know, the concerns that were abound before the scale-up of PrEP about what this would mean to epidemics of STIs amongst gay men are somewhat unfounded. We have seen, you know, while we've seen a significant increase in STIs, it's not as substantial as some people were predicting. And I think the study really emphasises the importance of high-frequency testing and an endorsement of Australia's PrEP guidelines and the types and quality of sexual health and clinical care we're able to provide people in Australia in relation to PrEP. I think the other take-home message of the study is that STI risk amongst men taking PrEP is not as simple as, you know, blaming people who have abandoned condoms and shaming and blaming people for sexual risk. I think the findings are a little more nuanced than that and, you know, maybe suggest that PrEP maybe make certain men and within certain networks are more vulnerable to STI infections and repeat infections. But that is also, you know, very useful for guiding our health promotion and clinical practice to guide interventions that might reduce that vulnerability in the future.
Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This has been The Informer. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and review on iTunes. It helps others to find the show.